Reefer Madness, the podcast, would like to acknowledge that we produce our shows on Treaty 2 territory and homeland of the Métis. We pay our respects to the First Nations and Métis ancestors of this land, and we reaffirm our relationships.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast, with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, you've got a really interesting guy from Winnipeg, named Stephen Stairs.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, Stephen Stairs. Well, as I say, when I was talking to him, he calls himself Manitoba's loud advocate for cannabis. And I've seen him on the news, you know, local CBC and CTV news. And I've sort of kind of followed him a little bit because if there's an issue happening in Winnipeg, he seems to get himself interviewed for it. So I thought, you know, we're out in Alberta, we're talking to people, we're getting lots of stories, and it was time that we needed another Manitoba story. And I was thinking, you know, what happens to these old advocates of cannabis back in the day? Because, you know, cannabis is now legal in Canada, so why do we need advocates to advocate for cannabis? Because it's legal now, so let's just, all the advocates can just go away, right? But I don't believe this is true because... Because there are,
and neither does he.
Well, of course not, and because there's still a lot of decisions being made about cannabis by people who don't fully understand this plant, and it goes back to some of the comments I've made before about when the government legalized recreational cannabis. Did they ask the right question? Right? Did they ask the right question? Did they, you know, the whole deal about legalization of recreational cannabis was that they wanted to protect the public and keep the public safe from cannabis. So advocates like Stephen Stairs, they approach cannabis differently. They approach cannabis from the perspective of there are benefits to cannabis and people benefit from cannabis. And maybe now that the government feels that they've legalized recreational cannabis, they have forgotten about the medicinal side of cannabis, you know, and this is where advocates like Stephen Stairs come in and say, whoa, 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 you know, you're making decisions here by asking the wrong question or with wrong information. So this is why I wanted to get him. This is why I wanted to get him in our, again, a voice in our library, because I think we still need advocates to talk about cannabis, and that's where he comes from.
Yeah. No. And as you mentioned, or I can't remember who mentioned this on mic, this is a longish interview, and he does a good job of introducing himself. He's obviously spoken about this before. How about we'll get into Stephen, and then we'll have a couple comments at the end.
Sure. Okay.
Well, my name's Stephen Stairs. Longtime cannabis advocate here in Canada, medical cannabis patient, grower, legally blind. That's a great time. That's part of the reason why I'm a medical cannabis grower. it stopped the degradation of my vision loss. Well, let's say hindered it. Let's not say stopped. And then, yeah, that's basically where I got my start in cannabis advocacy is that it was a passionate part of my mental health regeneration from dealing with the vision loss. And just the results were enough to sway me, like, this needs to be, you know, pushed out to the masses. The education needs to be done. The legislation needs to be passed. And we need to have a better social construct, the way we treat cannabis as a whole. But specifically at that point, it was medical cannabis. So, you know, that just... That fostered all the growth from there. And you know, 11 years later, almost 12 years now, we have legal cannabis in Canada. And, you know, hopefully in the next year or two, we might have a DIN for some medical cannabis. So I don't know. Things are progressing, man.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So 11 years. So you're in your late teens when you were starting to lose your vision.
Yeah, I was actually, I was born legally blind.
Okay.
But... I never really got diagnosed or anything until, you know, I mean, like basically when I was a little kid in school, you know, I had the Coke bottle glasses and I had to do that whole, like, you know, patch over the eye thing. But I mean, as far as, you know, the school system or like society understanding it, I was just the kid who couldn't see well, right? That's, you know, I was just a kid to make fun of, or, you know, who couldn't see the board properly or whatever. There wasn't really like a social diagnosis until I was older and the ramifications started kicking in. Like, wait, this kid can't see the board at school. You know, this kid, you know, won't be able to ever drive, things like that. So that's when the real, you know, I guess severity of it really kicked in for people.
And did you discover then cannabis as a teenager? You start recreationally and it sort of helped you with anxieties?
Yeah. So basically what it did is, as a teenager, I found it was not only a social mechanism, kind of like the social aspect of smoking cigarettes. You know, there's always a group of them having a conversation, even though I'm not a smoker. But it was kind of that mentality. You know, there was a group, peers, you know, non-judgmental, you know, same age demographic, that we all gravitated towards each other. And that just happened to be through cannabis. And that's where I have some of my long lasting friends still to this day. It was from that small core group. I never knew the medicinal value of it at the time. But I mean, looking back on it from a retrospective point, I mean, definitely it caused me to cope better, I think, with the vision loss at that time, just through different manifestations rather than, you know, actual culpable physical manifestations.
No, that's a good story. When did you become a medical cannabis user then, like an official guy?
Card sharing.
Card sharing. Yeah. Back in the day. I love that line. So it was about 2008 that I got the idea. One of my friends actually just kind of jokingly in passing was like, man, you know, through a sesh was like, man, you should get medical marijuana. I'm like, what? Ah, fuck that. You know, like, I can't, what are you talking about? Like, come on. And then, you know, the stoner in me was like, maybe. So I did my research, you know, and I went on the Health Canada website, and back then it was, you know, the two-tiered system, you know, the B1 and the B2, right? B1 was all, you know, the, you know, like hardcore, you know, illnesses, you know, cancer, you know, AIDS, you know, spina bifida, all these, you know, real serious conditions. And then the secondary category was things like arthritis, glaucoma, you know, anxiety, a whole bunch of other ones, right? So I ended up, you know, blindness, like glaucoma. So I, you know, took it to my doctor, the forms, I just printed it out, took it to my eye specialist. And it was a very interesting process. I mean, a lot of people at that time were running into hurdles with their doctors being gatekeepers, and still today. But back then it was really prevalent because there were very few doctors. I mean, when I became a medical cannabis patient, eventually in 2009, there were only 5,600 of us in Canada. And then that ballooned to close to, you know, 45,000 by 2013. So it grew exponentially over those few years. But my doctor was pretty cool that he took the paperwork and, you know, kind of gave me he's an old British guy. So he kind of gave me this like stoic, I was around for the 60s kind of like lesson. and it was awesome. He basically told me, you know, Stephen, I had a gentleman back in the 70s, you know, he thought cannabis was the world, and he ended up losing his vision because he thought it would save him. And you know what? He didn't listen to what I had to tell him. I'm like, I'll listen to whatever you tell me, doc. You sign that paperwork, I'm your freaking, like, I'm your gopher, you know? he ended up, yeah, he signed it. He basically just told me, make sure I take my eye drops and do whatever he tells me on top of that. And he was good to go. And he has been ever since. Even to this day, he still signs my paper for free, no charge.
Okay, so that was back in the day. So now you got into advocacy. So from my search, my Google searching of you, you're involved with 420?
Yeah. Funny story how that actually happened is I was on the U of M Council, University of Manitoba here. I ran for the student body there. I was the disabled student rep on council. And I ran on a platform of like legalizing pot on campus and all these other kind of things, because I had some advocacy background that started there. Legal department at the U of M gave me like a written legal paperwork to carry on me at all times, so I could like dry herb vape inside class at U of M, which was great.
Wow. When was that?
That was 2011. Wow. I still had the paperwork. Yeah, super cool.
Yes.
So that snowballed me into this whole, well, let's further this, right? And that year, I went to 420 at the Ledge and here in Manitoba Legislative Building. And it was what all the negative stereotypes that had been reinforced to me over like the past 10 years as to why I didn't go. It was just very prevalent to me in my face. It was, you know, high school kids who were, you know, skipping school, you know, you had idiot, like, you know, thug wannabe gangsters selling shit weed, you know, like it was just, there was no organization. It was just a shit show, right? We didn't have that cultural event that other cities with long-standing cannabis cultures like BC, Toronto, you know, Vancouver, all these areas of the country outside of Canada had a much more established 420, right? So I looked to other cities at that point and said, this is embarrassing. You know, I can't come to this. If I want to be a cannabis advocate in Manitoba, like, I mean, 420s, you know, that was back then, 420 was it, you know, 420, right? It's like the king of advocacy, right? So without it being something that I could stand up and stand behind, I was shocked. So I ended up getting the University of Manitoba, their student body, their university council, to give me a $500 grant. Okay. And with that $500 grant, I took it and I rented a bus and I paid for a parade permit. So what I did is I showed up at the Ledge, you know, I had a bunch of signs and shit we made and stuff. We had a little prize draw. But the main thing is I took this bus and we shipped. In retrospect, it wasn't a great idea trying to get stoners onto a bus without knowing where they were going. But but we ended up getting a couple bus loads of people and we shipped them to City Hall. And from there, we had a police escorted march through the downtown back to the Ledge. So that was like my first real, we can change this, right? We can change this image. And then from there, every year, we got a little bit more leash from the government, a little bit more leash from the province, from the city, from police, you know, all these different departments who, you know, eventually we got to basically in 2018, just before legalization happened, we had a full-on festival. You know, we're talking road closures. We're talking music performers. We're talking street vendors with food trucks, with public stage speakers, with politicians. And, you know, we had like all we had. The great part about that year was it was the last time we had a real melding of legal and legacy. Because I had the illegal like dab vendors from BC. Like I had Glacial Gold out there before they went legal. I had them in a booth serving dabs on the street right beside Tweed's big booth, handing out free sunglasses and shit.
What year was this?
That was 2018.
Okay.
Just amazing, man. It was amazing. And there's so much possibility now for 420 to become that cultural event again with legalization. I mean, post-pandemic, you know, pandemic really screwed things up for public festivals. And we've kind of been in a lull with legalization since then, virtually. So,
What is your role with 420?
I'm the chair of the organizing.
Okay, and just give me some background on 420, because to be honest, I don't know much about it. How many people sit on the committee? How's that work?
Sure. So in the committee's beginning days, it was virtually just me, which was fun at the U of M, and then it snowballed into my wife and I, and then it snowballed into a full on group or committee where by about 2014 or 15, we had, you know, full-on council meetings. What we would do is, and this is kind of, it's this further throughout the years, we wanted to build community as we did it. So what we would do is we would have the committee members all show up at like a different head shop. So sometimes we would be at like this one kind of quasi dispensary. I think that was like 2015 era where there was a few dispensaries in Winnipeg, where we would have our meetings, and sometimes it would be at a head shop, sometimes it would be at, you know, someone's, you know, restaurant, you know, but yeah. It was all pretty, you know, there was interesting times, right? But
like, yeah, no, I remember walking down the street in Winnipeg near the Great Canadian Food shoe store, right, in the Exchange, and just walking down towards center of town, I forget what street I was on, and there was a store selling cannabis, and it was like, hold on, we're not legal yet. I don't even think the liberals were in power yet. So you were involved with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I think what then it might have been. I'm not sure which one have been. It could have been Vapes Off Main. It could have been Weeds, Glass and Gifts. It could have been.
I think it was Weeds.
It was probably Weeds. Yeah, because they were just in that exchange area. It you know, very interesting dynamic back then. I mean, kind of a weird way. There was a lot more protest back then because it was needed. And I honestly, I feel like, I mean, a little bit more about 420 in a second, but I just feel like that protest is still needed. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people have lost. The general population thought legalization solved all our problems. Boom. Okay, great. See you later, everybody. But the people who are diehards in the community are like, no. This created more problems. Like, we got to sort this shit out now. So there's a lot more that has to do with public advocacy and getting with every social change, we have to have the society behind us. And right now, society has kind of left the fight. They're just happy with going to buy weed. It's the, you know, people like you and me who are causing the fight to keep going, right?
Yeah, pacify the public. One of the things I marvel at is that with new regulations, we actually got more laws now than we had before legalization, recreational legalization.
Yeah, I mean, granted, I mean, there's the criminal code violations are fewer, but the municipal violations and the provincial penalties and fines and all that stuff are, way more. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a tit for tat kind of thing. I mean, honestly, the real key is enforcement. And if they're not enforcing it, even though they put them on the laws, then I think we're clear.
So what was a good point? So what is happening with 420 now as an organization? And I guess, are you able to speak to 420 globally or just Winnipeg? Like, what is happening to that movement now that you won, I guess, in some ways?
No, it's a really interesting question. I mean, the media has posed that to me before in the past. You know, what does 420 become? And I think 420 stays exactly what it is, and that is a cultural event. I think just the meaning behind that cultural event is shifting with the times. You know, we used to use rotary phones. Now we have them on a screen in our pocket. You know, so everything changes with the time, but phones are still there, right? 420 will still be here. It's just a matter of what it changes into, and it will have a, like I kind of alluded to before, it will have a protest event still to it, I think, continually until we reach a point where cannabis legislation throughout not only Canada, but throughout the world is much more equitable towards societal benefits than it is detriments. So I think if we keep that notion there, plus we further the idea of the successes, of the wins, of the victories that we've accomplished, and we celebrate those in a cultural event, we can combine the two to where we have a realistic approach towards where we've been and where we're going.
So where are we going? Where are you going?
I think we're just going up, man. I mean, I can make the pyre joke, but I mean, I think that's a bad pun. But
why? I said it in my head, and I think the listeners probably said the same thing. We're getting higher. Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot there. There's a lot where we can go with. I mean, right now, Canada really needs to take another approach towards the way we treat medical cannabis. Sorry. Just a
city living.
Siren going by there. I just want to. Medical cannabis. That's really where it needs to go. And then, you know, look where we're at. We're psychedelics possibly being. I mean, we've got BC looking at, you know, decriminalizing all drug possession under small amounts. So only places to go is up, man.
Well, Stephen Stairs, I've seen you on the local CBC and CTV news. You were advocating for, about 6-7 months ago, people were complaining about grow-ups in the city, stinking up neighborhoods. And I heard you speak to the city council on that, I believe. Do you want to speak a little bit about these grow-ups? What is the fear and what is your idea of a solution?
Well, I mean, so the problem is that's been raised in Manitoba here, Winnipeg specifically, is since about last December, the city of Winnipeg has been fielding complaints, like officially, they would call it, from concerned residents from certain areas of the city. It's actually kind of all over the city, but they're mostly you know, more affluent residential areas, you know, middle class areas, let's call it that.
St. James area.
Yeah. And what they're doing is they're basically, they have concerns regarding medical cannabis gardens. Now, this isn't specifically kind of nuanced. This isn't specifically the medical cannabis gardens program. It's the, you know, perceived abuses of that program by criminal elements in this case, which would, you know, be backed up by police, you know, evidence, and et cetera, if they can prove it. But it basically has to do with the use of houses for non-residential spaces for only cannabis garden production. And I mean, like, we're talking, you know, the houses where no one lives, where 600 plants are grown under like four licenses, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean,
yeah, and the walls are weeping because of the moisture. Yeah, yeah.
And I've said this very publicly, and I'll say it again. I really don't have a problem with the black market, because the black market is how we got to where we are. Okay, legacy exists for a reason. However, as soon as that black market started using the medical cannabis system as a cover for their illegal activities, that made it whole way tainted. It's very unethical for you to put the rights and lives of sick people and their gardens at risk for your own personal profit. And I've gotten a lot of flack for that over the years, but it's something I will hold true to, because if you want to grow black market, go ahead, please do.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a, yeah, well, but it's interesting. I'm kind of wondering if the gray market, the black market, before recreational legalization, I'm wondering if a lot of the weed that we were seeing on the streets between 2005 to 2018 wasn't medically grown cannabis, that somebody was subsidizing their grow up. So when we talk about black market, people perceive, you know, the Hell's Angels motorbike gangs. But I can't help but wonder if some of those medical growers back in the day were subsidizing their gardens with something out the back door.
Oh, and I'm sure they were. And there's, and again, that this comes with a level of nuance as well, is that there are large, and still are, people who are using the medical cannabis system to its benefit to supply medical patients, yeah, who actually need cannabis, who can afford it, who are on low income, all these kinds of people, the ethical, the people who we take our hats off to, you know, yeah, those people, they still exist out there. But unfortunately, they get blanketed just like me. I'm luckily if I had a bigger garden, I'd probably do that, but I don't. Right? Yeah, so I only go for myself, right? But it puts people like us who are legitimately trying to help ourselves or others, and then it kind of coats us with this veneer of, okay, well, what about this, you know, weird criminal organization that has these weeping walls and stuff like you're mentioning? So there's nuance to all this stuff. And that's what I tried to explain to the city, is that there are certain levels to this. So if you just, the city's plan was to basically just move all medical cannabis gardens to an industrial area.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
I know. Yeah, 100% yeah, it's not going to work. I mean, yeah. Allard already basically ruled that can't happen based on safety risks and other things. So it was comical, okay? Yeah. But it's comical from a perspective from me and you, right? Because we're like, you got no chance, right? But we know it. We know the industry. We know the system. City of Winnipeg councillors, they don't know shit.
No. So what is the answer? Because the government, I mean, the government regulations allow people to go, who, you know, medicinal cannabis license, and I can grow my own, but I don't know how to grow it. I don't have the time. I'll give my license to someone else. He'll grow it. And then those growers, by regulations, are also allowed to gift up to 30 grams, right? You can gift 30 grams.
Yeah, you can gift 30 grams of weed to anybody. I mean, you can gift, yep. I mean, that's the great part about legalization of C-45 is it gave us these little outs in it.
So how do you now, as a city then, what is the answer? How do you regulate a federal regulation that doesn't understand cannabis either?
Okay, so...
Sorry, that was a little bit of bias.
Oh, amen. Amen, brother. So it's interesting. I mean, like, through C-45, there are, like, different tiers of where, like, legislation kicks in. I mean, provincial legislation is, you know, implemented for the sales and distribution and all that kind of stuff. And municipalities and cities can do things regarding bylaws and zoning, all right? And then, so basically, the feds did the law, province takes the brunt of it, and cities can make all the minutia details. Well, in this case, I mean, the city tried to do, like, bring up a plant count. Like, okay, well, over 50 plants, you got to go industrial. I'm like, okay, well, they'll just grow 49 tree-like plants And you're like, this is all old school arguments, right? Like, I mean,
right.
Think about this, people, right? So like, I've tried to explain to them that the only way, if they even choose to do this, they'll be accompanied, whatever they do will be accompanied with a constitutional challenge, I'm sure, right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. even if they try to nuance it and try to make it as you know, palpable towards, you know, the people who are complaining about it to the people who are growing it, I think what they'll do is they'll put in basically a registry. So what they'll do is they'll ask you to register your plants after a certain amount, which is stupid again. But then they'll have an inspection team from a municipal point of view, which will take over for the federal point of view, where, because, you know, Health Canada doesn't ever inspect gardens. The only reason they ever inspect gardens is if they've had like multiple criminal elements, you know, that had to send them there because of the police or something. So all I'm saying is that's not happening. So the city will send out these inspectors who will somehow be qualified to say this is legal, like electrical work or legal plumbing or whatever. I really don't know how they're going to create it. But the main point that I told them is that if they're going to do this, then the people who are really abusing the system, they have lots of extra money and they'll just pay all your stupid, you know, registration fees or whatever and keep doing what they're doing. And the people who can't afford it are going to be stuck with, you know, having to pay this arbitrary fee every year. Yeah. And then you have to then put in a compassionate program for sick and disabled people who actually need their gardens. So,
well, it just seems like more bureaucracy and more money spent. Yeah.
Total bureaucracy, yeah. Nonsense. So I'm really hoping that with flooding them with the realities of this, they'll choose to put this as a back burner issue. And then if there's really concerns from a neighborhood perspective, then let the police do their job. Let the police go and sit outside and watch for, you know, guys with guns or whatever the hell you think's going on, and then fucking take care of it. Like, don't over bureaucratize sick people because police aren't doing their job. That's it.
Okay, fair comment. Tell me about the Cannabis Business Association of Manitoba.
Great question. Every association or every industry, I should say, has its own association that represents it and lobbies and, you know, protects its interests and the people who are stakeholders in it. Manitoba specifically didn't have one of those. Canada has the Cannabis Council of Canada, C3, which is great, but they're on a much more national level and, you know, grassroots issues, no pun intended, are definitely something that still need to be done on the local level. And cannabis is still a very much grassroots local issue because it still affects everybody day to day in different ways. Until we fix that, it's not going to be something we can just blanket out one rule for, right? So the need for that in Manitoba was not great in the beginning. There were very few initial retailers here in the province. Some of them were quite big corporations, so they already basically had their own lobbying power with the governments. But now we have here in Manitoba, we have almost 125 stores. And that's, you know, built out of, you know, plus 50 different companies. So there's a lot of different interests and different needs from that point of view to deal with the government and regulators and, you know, just the public in general. So as a kind of a loud advocate here in the province and already kind of having relationships with these people, it kind of fell on me to start the association. In the beginning of the pandemic, Manitoba's cannabis stores were deemed essential, which was great because they were allowed to stay open and flourish during the pandemic. However, in early February of this year, I got a phone call from a store owner that told me he had something to tell me, and then he would get back to me, and I kind of just, you know, blah, 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 right? It was something big he was coming up, but he had to sort it out. And I was to pass it off as normal nonsense that I hear every day, right? Got to keep it up to date, right? All right, something's going on. I'll file it away, right? And I ended up walking into that said store later on in the day. Well, one of the stores that company owns. And I was greeted with a, you know, check my ID. And then someone asked me for, or someone told me as I was leaving that I could only buy cannabis products. Couldn't buy any accessories or papers or, and I was like, what? That's not how it works. I'm like, who told you that? They're like, oh, we had one of the security companies in Manitoba that was doing third party or enforcement of the provincial, you know, bylaws during the pandemic. They came up and I guess they had sent out a letter, you know, showed up and said, no, you can only sell cannabis products, no accessories, blah, 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 based on some sort of bullshit rule. I knew that was bullshit. I called it up. Sorry, siren. I knew that was bullshit. I ended up calling up the gentleman, the lawyer, actually, he's for the company. And I said, hey, you know, I'm in your store. What's this bull? And he's like, this is what I was going to tell you, but I had to sort it out. I'm like, okay, blah, 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 back and forth. Long story short is, through a couple phone calls between me and a couple regulators I know and a couple other people, that situation got resolved within a few hours, to the point where the LGCA, which is the Liquor Gaming and Cannabis Association of or Authority of Manitoba, they sent out a letter basically saying, hey, these guys are deemed essential. They can sell anything on their inventory list. Stop bothering them. And then we got a letter from that security company's owner apologizing to the company that was selling weed for like the mistake. And all I'm saying is that happened in a few hours. And at that point, it was like, boom, I was like, I have to start this association, because if we have that lobbying power just between a few of us, look what we can do as a group. And from there, it snowballed. I mean, had the Cannabis Business Association of Manitoba had its first event that ended up being one of its first of its kind in Canada, where we had retailers and regulators involved in a Q&A session so they could sort out details and questions that they might have for the regulators regarding upcoming changes or things that they might want to see changed. So it was really groundbreaking. And it ended up...
So how does someone look into it? How does someone look into Canada? Because to be honest with you, I Googled Cannabis Business Association Manitoba. I only found it on Facebook. So how do people become members? And how many members do you have?
So here's the deal. So we have a website that I've built, but it's not up and running yet, because I have to get the interest from the people before I put brands on it, right? I got to list them all as memberships. And therefore, memberships, I have to get them to pay a due. We haven't done any of that stuff because we don't have a board yet. Basically just me and a few other of the store owners in the province, you know, as a small little group. Because remember, it's only been 11 months and, you know, a lot of things have happened in them. But
COVID.
But formalization is something that we're working on right now. I mean, the website's built. It's just not available to the public. It is definitely a good group, and it involves most of the retail stores in Manitoba.
As it should. I mean, we're learning through this podcast that there's a lot of minutia and details to become a dispensary. It's very difficult to be like Alberta. I don't know if you heard our episode, but we spoke to a bunch of craft growers in Alberta, and they explained to us the Alberta system about how do they get their product on the shelf, and it's very difficult for them.
Yeah, I mean, Manitoba's is kind of the same way. Becoming a retail store is actually pretty easy, but the way the bureaucracy is set up of how stores run is pretty annoying. You gotta government buys the weed and you gotta sell it back to us. It's the whole thing.
So you've been a Manitoba loud advocate for cannabis for about what, 12 years. So what are the issues now facing the green culture, facing the cannabis industries? What do you think the, I guess, five top issues right now are?
Well, I mean, the number one issue that's on my mind right now is cannabis consumption spaces. So the province is about to start their consultation period with the stakeholders again regarding retail cannabis space consumption lounge policies. So hopefully within the next year, we will have, you know, public consumption spaces in Manitoba, which would be really nice, because currently you can't consume cannabis in public. You can't consume it in a store or a restaurant or anything like that. You're basically stuck consuming it at home.
And but for those people that live in condominiums and apartments, they can't even consume it there.
Yeah. And that's my point. So there's definitely a no social aspect of it. So you're forcing them to then somehow either break municipal bylaws or you're forcing them out in the street somewhere. I mean, what's the difference between that and having street, you know, heroin users? I mean, we're all people using drugs in a back alley now. I mean, it's, you know, we all need some equity in life. Not, I mean, even the heroin users, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. There's a lot towards. sorry. I can touch on that. I was going to go on an opioid rant. But I mean, definitely the consumption spaces is one. Retail cannabis store bylaws is another one the city of Winnipeg is looking at. So they're looking at zoning bylaws that could end up having some of the stores close or move. I mean, granted, grandfathering would probably be an issue there, but that's definitely something the city of Winnipeg is looking at again. The medical cannabis issue, something you touched on earlier, is something that the province is still dealing with. It's locally here in the city, but I mean, it's other municipalities are still looking at the issue as well. And then we've got, you know, the ban on home growing of cannabis from Tobagrone to Jesse, who's doing that fight constitutionally, which is going on. So that's a big one. And then I guess the last one is just, I would like to see, and this isn't just specifically for Manitoba, but it affects me directly. So it's a federal thing and a local thing for me, is I really want to see the province and the government federally work on treating medical cannabis differently. Medical cannabis has really been left to the back burner when it was the catalyst towards legalization to begin with. And I feel like, you know, we're running around with stoves and we forgot, you know, where the fire came from, you know what I'm saying? And we got to get back towards treating medical cannabis the way it was, the thing that saved people's lives, that created a social change amongst our country, that that made us realize that cannabis isn't that bad. So why the fuck don't we legalize it? That was the starter, right? That's the impetus. So why are we not furthering that notion? Why are we not giving cannabis a DIN? I get it. You can't give flower a DIN. Great. I get it. You can do capsules, oils, vape pens, all these other things can be given a DIN because you can control dosage, you control strains, you can do all that stuff. So we're taking that functionality out of it. So why don't we give cannabis a DIN? Why isn't more insurers covering it? Why can't I go into a brick and mortar store and buy medical cannabis? Why is medical cannabis more money and taxed? I can buy an ounce from the local store for $120. I go to Shoppers Drug Mart online and use my medical information. And it's $150. How does that make any sense?
Good,
that's
point.
My big beef. Sorry.
No, that and you know what? That's a podcast in itself, the whole medical side, because we stumble into that a lot. The whole tax issue, insurance companies. I mean, Trevor's rant is why, as a pharmacist, can't he be dispensing cannabis and offering advice, right?
100%. Why? Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, yeah, and it should be that way. So Stephen, I need to ask you, because, I mean, I this is my first meeting you, and I Googled you, and your name came across my desk about, I guess, 6, 7, 8 months ago. I saw you in the news, and I've been following you. So tell me, let's speak to some of the controversy, sir. There's some website saying, accused you of expropriating some monies. Another one was, so you know the ones I'm talking about. So let's speak to those.
Okay, so where do you want to start? Do you want to start?
Let's talk about the 420 controversy. Like, somebody accused you of stealing money.
Yeah, this will touch on the next question you're going to ask me. So I was involved in a quite messy breakup and divorce. And during that time, I was asked about 420 in the news. And in that time, the assumption was that basically that, to put it mildly, that my career was over. Let's just put it that way. The news media reached out to me regarding 420. And, I basically told them, you know, the city won't give us permits for this year because it was right after legalization. There was a whole story. And that didn't go over well with the group of people who were in unison with my wife kind of trying to publicly attack me. So I basically had like a good old fashioned social media attack, which is nice. You know, everybody's got to have one once in a while, I guess. That basically just tried to oust me as some sort of like thief amongst 420, and that all this money was stolen, and that we were having drug parties and all these other kinds of things. And I'm not going to lie, there's an element of truth behind that, is that my wife and I really partied hard. And I ran 420. But to somehow combine the two was inaccurate, false, and just a way to smear my reputation. I'm very, like, I mean, granted, I was very willing to talk about this in the media, and I'm willing to talk about it now, because my wife was the financial agent of 420. So she was in charge of all the money. So even if this was true, she would have proof of it. There was no proof. This was all accusations. This was all just trying to way to smear me, because I was contacted for 420. And then the next day, the news media got all these phone calls from like two people about how awful I am. I've already kind of ousted this group in public. And there's a lot of backstory. If you check my social media on Facebook and stuff, I really encourage everybody to go do that, because you will see what I'm talking about. I'm not just trying to oversight some information. It's all documented. I'm a very public person. Go for it. I would answer any questions in the future. My point, though, is that this little, I would call it group, right? I'm not going to disparage them as people individually. They're just a group who, you know, thought they were somehow one-upping me. And their little group ended up devolving quite publicly in other dramatic situations of theft and, you know, backstabbing and all these other kinds of things. So any credibility from their perspective was lost by their own actions. So I wasn't worried about it, because when you see something that's not true, you basically just go, okay, you're going to get found out sooner or later. And that's what happened. And that's cool. I have been transparent with 420 from the beginning. I've got documents and, you know, all that kind of stuff that I have that, you know, would dispel any of these rumors. I'm willing to share them with anybody. I always have been. I gave them to the media back then. And that's really about it. I mean, since then, I've continued to plan 420. I've continued to have corporate sponsors. I've continued to spend the money appropriately. There's been documentation proof of that. So I'm not worried about my reputation with 420, because I've proved myself to be the person that I am, not the person I was tried to be labeled as. So,
okay, that's good. Let's circle back just real quick here. Circle back to the U of M. So you did you're a student at U of M. You started your advocacy there. Did you finish your degree?
Political studies? No, I got 3 or 4 years from political science.
Okay. So what is it that you do now? How do you, when you're not advocacy for cannabis, what do you do now?
Right now, I'm disabled, man. Okay. I'm visually impaired, so I collect provincial disability. That's okay. What I do. It's a really shitty situation, but the fact that I have a criminal record from many years ago as a young man is still something that that's a whole podcast in itself. Criminal records.
Yeah. Well, that actually, I actually have a word out for that interview. Canadian embassy.
We'll talk about it. But yeah, no, so criminal records and having a disability are two things that you don't really factor into each other. But in today's current, you know, tech environment and privacy, you know, focused environment, it's very hard to find.
Is your criminal record in cannabis related, or is it?
It's in everything related. It's in, I was 16 and stole cars. Okay. And that precluded into like me having an adult juvie record or all that kind of stuff. And then when I was...
But you're blind, man. How did you be stealing cars when you're blind?
Okay, so that's the whole fun point about this is that... No, this is a great story. It's in my book. I'm writing a book, and it's for a great 2 chapters. I was told like at 16 that I could never drive. Like I had to go through like this whole testing where they tested my eyes and my, you know, functionality and dexterity and all these things. And I basically got like that whole, you know, sit down with, you know, my dad on one side and a doctor on the other and, you know, you'll never drive, you know, boom, boom, boom. And it's like a, you know, very, you know, I was a typical male. I was a, you know, 16-year-old kid full of hormones, full of, you know, testosterone. And I was heartbroken. You know, I was, you know, the one guy who couldn't do the guy stuff. You know, I couldn't catch a football, couldn't drive, right? Couldn't do all these things. And that was kind of like a breaking point for me. You know, I mean, looking back on it now, I'm almost crying talking about it, but I mean, I rebelled pretty hard and I basically told the world, fuck off. And, you know, I said, if you're not going to let me drive, I'm going to drive anyway. And I stole some cars from some dealerships.
And you got caught.
Oh, I got caught much later after I stole many cars. I did not learn my lesson until I was over. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It was a good 6 months of me stealing dealership cars. Yeah.
Okay. Well, is there anything, this has been 45 minutes. I appreciate your time. Is there anything I haven't asked you about your advocacy towards cannabis?
You know, not really. I mean, I think that there's... for anybody who's listening to this and who doesn't know me, and for anybody who's listening to this and does know me, my message is still the same. I eat, sleep, and breathe this industry. Not from a legalization perspective, not from an even making money perspective. That's one of the main things I like to tout about myself, is that I don't get paid by, like, I got a tweed hat on, I got a Highway 59 sweater, but all this stuff is just for the hard work I do. I don't get paid by these guys. They hand me a swag bag because I'm on TV, and I'm like, sweet, sweater, right? I'm a poor guy with fucking, you know, new hoodie, like, great. Like, but I don't bow down to any of these companies. When Tweed does something stupid, I yell at them on social media. You know, if one of the local companies does something stupid, I'm there calling them out on it, because that's how I operate. And I've done that for so long that I think sometimes people forget that if I say something controversial, it's because I've probably said the opposite of that in the past. And I don't mean that as a hypocrisy. I mean that sometimes you have to, like I said in the beginning, sometimes I'm up there promoting the legal industry. I got my tweed hat on and I'm, you know, go retail. And sometimes when a local cannabis, you know, black market company gets busted and I know that they had some pretty good product and I know that there were really good staff, I'm on the news talking about how it's shitty that they got busted. So it's not that I'm somehow picking sides. I only have one side, and that's cannabis. And when I talk about it, it's not from a perspective of somehow I have vested interest in whatever company I'm talking about or whatever political issue. I'm doing it because it needs to be said. And a lot of things don't get said that need to be. And sometimes it just falls on me to be the one who says it.
All right. So I think, Trevor, one thing I picked up on this, and I think people, Stephen Stairs is a character. He's an advocate. He's known in Winnipeg. And I think, like all advocates, they set themselves up as a target. I want to thank him because, you know, going into an interviewing somebody that is an advocate, we're taking a risk in the sense that, who is this guy? What's he going to say? And how is he being perceived? When I researched him, I found some perceptions of him that aren't good. And I appreciated the fact that he allowed me to ask those questions. And I liked the way he addressed them. You know, he's got a target, so he's obviously outspoken. So it's easy for people to criticize him. I like the way... You know, as a 16-year-old guy, God, you know, if I was told at 16 that I wasn't allowed to drive, I mean, driving was my identity at 16.
Was everything.
Right? I mean, I was the guy who had a car that people came to because I had tire biters because I had the car, right? So not being able to drive would have made me angry. I think back of the type of lad I was at 16, I would have been very angry too.
I have a newly minted 16-year-old behind that wall there, and he gets to get his sort of final, well, graduated in Manitoba now, but to not be a learner anymore in February, and he's counting down the days to when he can take that test. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. It's part of our identity as adolescents, right? I mean, the car. Oh God, I've got so many memories of being a kid driving around with a car full of other kids, being stupid, right? So I get that. I like the way he explained that, and I appreciate his honesty. I like the fact that, you know, the Cannabis Business Association of Manitoba, I think that is an advocacy group that we need because we are learning that they need a voice. And, you know, so Stephen's moving into that area. I also...
I like to come up with his origin stories things. Like, so, you know, the origin of advocacy, not necessarily being involved with cannabis, but, you know, he's involved in student politics in 2011. And, you know, what are you going to run on? Let's legalize pot. And then from there, he goes to a 420 thing at the ledge and goes, this is terrible. This is so badly done. We could do it better. And then manages the next year to come back with a small grant to get a bus to move people from the ledge to City Hall so they could march back. Like, Yeah. If you had something like that, you know, he had the drive and the forethought to do that, and then it worked out okay. And then, you know, it just kind of went from there. And another one of his quotes I really liked is, "I don't have a problem with the black market, because the black market is how we got here." Like, that shouts advocacy, right? You know, that's a controversial statement, but it definitely gets your attention. But then he went on to talk about the nuances of, he didn't, at that point, you and him were talking about the, we'll call them grow ops and houses in Winnipeg, and how he didn't like people using the medicinal end of things to sort of get into the black market. Like, he was against that. So he makes the big statements that grab your attention, but then he definitely knows about the nuance along the way.
Yeah, and I think what this story does for me, it reminds me that although we have legalized recreational cannabis, and the government may think that they've done something magical here by doing that, I think what he reminds us is that someplace we have forgotten about the medicinal users of cannabis. You know, and I go back to that whole question, is did the government ask the right question when they legalized cannabis? In answering their question about, you know, keeping us safe from cannabis, I think they forgot about those people who are using cannabis as a benefit to their quality of life. And because we have all these new laws governing recreational cannabis, it has a direct effect on those that are using cannabis medicinally, such as, where can a medicinal cannabis user consume cannabis? Right? If you live in an apartment, you can't consume your medicine, you know, well, consume it through inhaling, I guess, in your apartment. You can't do it in your condo. And if you go down to the street to do it, like smokers do, well, you can, as a medicinal user, consume your cannabis on the street, but you got to have your green card with you. And they don't even issue green cards anymore. So there's a lot of barriers created through the legalization of recreational cannabis that affect medicinal users. And I think, you know, where does an old advocate go? Where do they go? They start getting back to the basics, you know, of being a medicinal user.
Well, and that actually segues nicely into my cannabis story that we have this time.
Yes.
Back when we were in Calgary, I got to talk to the Calgary Cannabis Club. And they've got several issues. They're another advocacy group. But one of their big issues is exactly like you said, where can I go? You know, it's legal, but where can I go consume my cannabis?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you listen here to Neil, he'll give you his pitch about what the Calgary Cannabis Club is up to.
Yeah, that's a good My Cannabis Story to add to this one. It blends well. It also blends well to the cannabis story we had in our episode 80 with the Vancouver apartment dweller who spoke to us about his dilemma also. So there is an issue right now for medical cannabis people and where can they consume the medicine. So yeah, let's just spill right into that story.
So we're back here at Hempfest, and next up we have somebody from the Calgary Cannabis Club.
Hi everybody. My name is Neil Linton. I'm with the Calgary Cannabis Club, the events director here. A little bit about our club. We're a not-for-profit organization. We're down here at Hempfest. We're big on activism. We like to educate our Calgarians, and we try to get a lot of social networking going, social connect work, and community services. Calgary Cannabis Club is a non-for-profit based registered society here in Calgary, Alberta. We're community-based, focusing on furthering cannabis culture and helping patients and recreational users, providing knowledge-based resources for our ever-growing cannabis community. Big thing that we're working on here at the Cannabis Club is a petition to change the bylaws, City of Calgary, for cannabis consumption in a public place. Because we at the Calgary Cannabis Club strongly urge the City of Calgary Council to review and revise bylaw 24M2018, cannabis consumption in a public place. You know, please help stop the stigma that was started by Nancy Reagan in 1980 with her war on drugs classifying cannabis in the same family as cocaine and heroin. Cannabis consumption, the consumption of alcohol is allowed in some Calgary public parks. The consumption and smoking and vaping of cannabis should be permitted, same as tobacco use in public places, and many other Canadian provinces and cities currently allow. For example, the province of Ontario allows cannabis consumption in a public place in many outdoor spaces, examples, sidewalks and parks. Province of Nunavut will allow the consumption of cannabis in private homes and in some public spaces where tobacco is allowed. Cannabis use in Northwest Territories is limited to private parties, private properties, and where smoking tobacco is allowed on trails, roadways when not operating a motor vehicle, and in parks when not in use for a public event. The province of British Columbia, the CCLC prohibits cannabis smoking and vaping everywhere. Tobacco smoking and vaping is prohibited, as well as in playgrounds, sporting fields, skate parks, and other places where children may commonly gather. The City of Edmonton Public Spaces Bylaw regulates that smoking is prohibited in public spaces. This includes cannabis vaping, tobacco and cannabis vaping and smoking. Whether you're smoking cannabis for recreational or medical purpose, everybody is expected to follow the same rules in the City of Edmonton. City of Toronto, Bill 36, also amended the in governing consumption of cannabis. Their new rule prohibits the smoking of cannabis in the same places where tobacco smoke is prohibited and electrical cigarettes. Smoking and in a motor vehicle is also prohibited by the City of Toronto. So we feel it's just very unjust for electoral voters of the City of Calgary to have no public areas of consumption for cannabis.
No, that's great. Now, have you had a lot of people interested in your petition? Like, how about the local cannabis shops, and how's the interest been in your petition?
Oh yeah, we have a lot of interest. We've contacted news peoples. I've actually got the petition physically out at about 20 different shops right across all of Calgary. Everybody from little small mom and pop LP shops to Hemp Roots, IncrediGrow, Quick Grow, all the grow centers have it out for us. So everybody's been real receptive as to we need to see a change, because this is quite literally wrong. A medical user can go and smoke cannabis anywhere a cigarette is permitted to be smoked, but if you don't have your medical license, you're not prohibited. So, like, we're here at Kempfest right now, and we're in a blacked out area because it's our cannabis consumption area. That's not fair for anybody. It's a little ridiculous, but we got to do what we got to do to see these changes happen. Even though the Canada has made cannabis legal, it's really not legal in Calgary at the very least, because Edmonton can do what they want, but we can't do what we want here. So it's a big change we need to see happen. And, you know, I really appreciate Reefer Meds, helping us out and putting us on this podcast and, you know, coming out and making everybody aware of it. Yep. We've got a nice QR code that you'll bring us to your website. You can just sign that petition online as well. If you can't make it down in person to sign it, we can accept an electrical signature. It has a little bit more information, but the more people we can get to help us out with this cause, the better. The City of Calgary actually mandates that I have to follow the provincial regulations in a petition, meaning I require 10% of the electoral voters for the City of Calgary. So that's 129,000 people that I need to gather the signatures between 60 and 90 days. It's a mission.
You know, and Neil, this is, I'm really enjoying learning more about the Calgary Cannabis Club and your petition. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So Kirk, a longish episode, but a good one on advocacy. Thank you very much for bringing us the Stephen Stair story and reminding us, because honestly, I think I'm one of those people that, well, other than the medicinal stuff, which I've whined about in the past, but you know, it's pretty easy to think that, you know, cannabis is legalized in Canada. That's all we need to do. But no,
there's more work to be done.
There is more work, and advocates that are going to be busy for a while yet.
Yep. Well, I'm Kirk Nyquist. I'm the registered nurse.
I'm Trevor Schufeld. I'm the pharmacist. And we are Reefer Madness, the podcast.
And we encourage people to go to our website, www.reefermed.ca, and you will find the transcripts, you'll find the research papers, you will find pictures, you will find our blog, you will find our appreciation, people that we appreciate and relationships we've had, and Hoppy Dreams. Hoppy Dreams.
Hey, here's something cool. Reefer Madness Hoppy Dreams Pillows. We've had a local group of artisans create a limited supply of these pillows to reward supporters of our podcast. These sachets, stamped with our logo, of course, are made from repurposed hemp material and are stuffed with a special blend of dried hops, lavender, chamomile, and rose petals. This aromatic combo helps induce slumber and promote sweet dreams. As you know, Reefer Madness, the podcast, is a reliable and popular source of cannabis information. And we want to keep it going for many years to come. That's why we're asking for your support and rewarding you with this one-of-a-kind gift. Send us a pledge of $80 Canadian or more, and we will send you a sweet Hoppy Dreams pillow. To get yours now, we're asking for a minimum pledge of $80 Canadian. Just go to reefermed.ca and click on the Relationships tab. There's a limited supply of these Reefer Madness, the podcast collector's items, so why not click over there now? Then look forward to an awesome sleep, knowing you supported our fun and informative passion project.
Sounds good. All right. Well, talk to everybody later.
All right. Goodbye. Have a good day.
All right, guys. That was another good one. Thank you very much. It's Renee back here in the studio. Just to wrap stuff up with a song, as we normally do. Our guest, Stephen, actually had a request, and that was Medication by Damian Marley. So that's what we'll do. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next.
Medication. Your medication makes me high. Just be patient. I'm like a patient trying to find levitation. Run your fingers down my spine. Elevation. Your medication makes me high. Hey.
Such a short way up and such a long way down. And this is a bubble like where they are right down. The way you're something off it off your way by pound. In a fields of marijuana, that is my playground.
I love you, Mary Jane.
You're the prettiest of flowers, girl, me can't complain. When I'm with you, I feel so high, I rise above the rain. And you know the people damaged like that bitch cocaine. No, I leave them lonely, feeling only pain. Cause your DNA is of the highest strain. Your effect is so potent, it's so insane. You so gummy and sticky like a plaster stain. When you grind out your body, only stems remain. And to love you is so risky, I might get detained. You always keep me flying on the highest plane, and anybody know we'll always proclaim.
Medication, your medication makes me high. Just be patient. I'm like a patient trying to find levitation. Run your fingers down my spine. Levitation. Your medication makes me high. Yeah.
Your leaves of green. Your purples and blues has cured little kids and old women too. And I say to myself, what a wonderful herb. And I say to myself, what a wonderful herb.
Look how Babylon stood up me. Them fight to fears for your love, only poor man serve years. Babylon stood up me. Them fight you for years, and now the whole of them are by shears. You should be a celebrity amongst any tree across the seven seas for your energy, but you're an enemy catching felonies for the remedies in your recipes.
Medication, your medication makes me high. Just be patient. I'm like a patient trying to find levitation.
A stick nor seed, and she never post ripe. It was a real slow speed. No fertilizer, natural baby feed. No cross pollination, she's a real pure breed. Cultivated with love, and she's not grown for greed. She's everything I want, and also all I need.
Medication, your medication makes me high. Just be patient. I'm like a patient trying to find levitation. Run your fingers down my spine. Elevation.
I couldn't help but overhear you guys, and that's great. Yeah. Cause I was just talking to the booth over there, what you're doing. I'm from Ontario,
yeah.
And I come here, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean I can't smoke outside? What the fuck?